known it. This is not Republicanism as we have known it. These are racist ideas, race-baiting ideas, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, anti-women, all key tenets making up the emerging racist ideology known as the alt-right. Now, alt...
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
This is Mayor Rick Kreisman, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Will the soundtrack kindly produce a sound? Go on, don't be nervous. Go ahead. Any sound? Well, that isn't quite what I had in mind.
Here we go again. This is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on RadioSt.Pete.com. My name is Will Koontz, host of this program for now. For the rest of time, I'm having a tough day today. It's been a fun day, but a rough day. I ripped my favorite pants that I own. If you know me well, you know I wear a pair of very light linen material shorts that are very breathable. They have an elastic band that I need because my torso is fat, and this way it gives me a little room to work with. You know, if I have a slice of pizza, I'll be able to breathe. And unfortunately, I noticed a little tear in the right near the crotch area in the front, and I was like, oh no, I wonder if I can patch that. And then as I went to go get in the truck today, a little later, I just felt the whole backside in the taintish area and towards the butt just split entirely, a nice 6-inch split. I'm still wearing them now because I'm enjoying my last few minutes with these very valuable pants that I'll never be able to find again. That's the thing with clothes, is that if you find something you like, once the new styles and the new seasons come out, you're sunk. That's it. You can't find these things again. I mean, I'm sure I can find pants with an elastic waistband, but it's still not going to be the same, right? It's not going to be the same material. But hey, you know, these things happen. And you can just move on and rebuild your life from that point on, which I will do. I will overcome this minor setback in my life with all these things that happened to me. That's the worst thing that happens to me this week. I'm going to be stoked. Can somebody tell Hillary Clinton's campaign that the internet is messing with her, please? She gave this speech. I played a clip at the beginning of the alt-right speech where she accused these people of being bitter racists, and you heard it. And then a man interrupted her and yelled, Pepe, which is, if you're not familiar, is internet stuff, 4chan stuff. There's this little cartoon frog meme. You've probably seen it whether you... I'm not a 4chan or anything, but I still know what it is. And these guys, I was just reading this article, pretty much punked the media here. Let's see. Let's go up here. I was just reading The Daily Beast. Olivia Nuzzi wrote a piece in May striving to describe and trace the genesis of the Pepe and the alt-right scene. A liberal political movement focused on preserving white identity and Western civilization. In the process, Nuzzi ended up repeating various made-up stories from the only two people she interviewed from Frog Twitter. Might want to do a little more in-depth searching and interviewing before you pump out nonsense. So the guy that they interviewed was Paul Town and Jared Taylor Swift on Twitter. Frog Twitter is an offshoot alt-right subculture primarily interested in memes, aesthetics, and trolling of political figures. Since then, Pepe as a white nationalist has become a meme of its own sort, circulated through liberal circles, cable networks, and think pieces. Rounding out this tidal wave of winery, Pepe made an appearance on Hillary Clinton's own campaign site. I saw that this week, and I just stared at it for 15 minutes and just silently chuckled to myself at work because it was the most fantastic thing that I've ever seen. As part of an effort by the campaign to try to associate Donald Trump Jr. with white supremacy. So he, I guess they called, she called the Trump people, some of them, a basket of deplorables, which is just a slip of the tongue, you know, that happens. And then somebody made a meme of these figures, Donald Trump and Donnie Jr. and Roger Stone and Milo Yiannopoulos and these guys in the, what's that movie, the Expendables. They put their faces over there, and one of them was Pepe the meme. Donald Trump Jr. retweeted this meme out, and of course everybody went bonkers because this is a white supremacist meme. Why? Because we interviewed two guys from Twitter that said that's what it was. And I guess David Duke had used the meme and some of his own stuff that he does. David Duke was a KKK leader, I guess, back in the 70s or 80s. He's some weirdo. Now, just because somebody uses something doesn't mean that it automatically becomes the thing that you want it to become. I mean, I'm sure David Duke uses toilet paper, for example. You use toilet paper. I use toilet paper. It doesn't mean that we're all Nazis now. So this stupid reporter from the Daily Beast just ran with what these two dudes said and had no qualms with doing that. The explainer on Clinton's site features a direct quote from Jared Taylor Swift, one of the two accounts Newsy interviewed for her story. I still can't believe it. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. In recent months, this is from the guy, Pepe's been almost entirely co-opted by the white supremacists who call themselves the alt-right. They've decided to take back Pepe by adding swastikas and other symbols of anti-Semitism and white supremacy. Hillary Clinton's explainer notes, quoting prominent white supremacist Swift. This is just the guy from Twitter, Frog Twitter. And he says, we basically mixed Pepe in with Nazi propaganda, and we built that association. So this guy just trolled the entire media. And in turn, since these politicians are desperate, reaching for something that they can throw on the other side as being awful people, just ran with it. Didn't bother to fact check on their own. And then he goes on to say, I think the most ridiculous thing is that a random guy on the internet who trolled a journalist is now a prominent white supremacist. I mean, the only accurate part of that is the white part. This dude, Swift, told the Daily Caller News Foundation. And my Italian ancestry means that is even disputed. Yes, I'm sure a white supremacist would doubt that if he's an Italian. Swift is apparently a prominent white supremacist, created his Twitter account in 2015. His Twitter name is a tribute to Jared Taylor, a leading intellectual influence on the alt-right and founder of the magazine The American Renaissance. And he, this other guy, Paul, created his account in January 2016. They don't even look at the dates. I mean, it's like when you find a new, if you see a Facebook, I get these all the time. I'm sure you do too. That they add you, you have no idea who they are, you click on them, they have three friends. Hey, don't add that person because they're going to tag you in Oakley sunglass ads for $22. I mean, use your brains, people. What else is going to say? Private conversations between Frog Twitter and Newsy provided to the DNCF show in extent of the troll, which started after she began the Swift interview with, can I ask you some stupid questions? Newsy quoted Paul Towne describing how the Frog Twitter met for drinks in 2015 to plot appropriating the Pepe meme for white nationalism. Frog Twitter then supposedly coordinated a group effort to seed the meme on various image boards, probably 4chan, Reddit, etc. There is no plot to take a cartoon frog and make it a symbol of white supremacy, Paul Towne told the DNCF. That is the absurd face of it. Doesn't get that much better from Newsy's narrative. There was no Frog Twitter meetup. They did not meet for drinks to discuss green frogs. They did not plot in 2015. There was no group experiment. They did not coordinate efforts on these 4chan boards. When memes are born and subsequently end up in public, Jared Taylor Swift says he isn't actually 19. He doesn't live on the West Coast. Didn't turn to Taylor Swift, the pop singer, into an Aryan goddess. I love this. And most importantly, it's just not true that the biggest online supporters of Donald Trump are white nationalists. There you go. So these two kids, or guys, they're probably dudes in their mid-40s, probably with nothing better to do. People are mischievous. This is a new world we live in with the internet. And now people have more access than ever, especially here in North America, I guess, and Europe. People are funny. This is what I like people. I used to grow up being a cynic and thinking that people were horrendous people. The bad people that you meet are not bad. They're usually just dumb. And people are mostly good. I really have come to believe that. And then people are mischievous. They like to have fun, have a good time, and sometimes at other people's expense, that are too dumb maybe to do some fact-checking. Now, on the other side of that, the internet is the greatest, it's the greatest place for information, but at the same time, now, it's also the biggest source of disinformation ever assembled. There's just as much disinformation as there is real stuff out there. It's hard to tell the difference. Let's see, what else does this article say? I made my stuff a lot more tame than Paul, Swift added. I wanted her to think I was serious. Seems likely she'd have to run with anything. I told her, though. So these reporters, too, I think a lot of the problem is that they don't, they're forced to put out a lot of articles per day to survive. Most of them don't have stable staff positions. They're freelance. So a lot of them are just trying to write stuff to survive. They're pumping out 5 or 10 of these articles a day just to stay alive in New York. So they don't have time to fact check their sources. They find a juicy scoop and run with it. But that's totally the opposite of what journalism is supposed to be. And now, I guess this is a downside of the business, is that there's so much competition out there. You have to be the first to scoop something. You have to get a juicy nugget. But it's at the expense of what is real anymore. How do you know what's true or not? So you have to do your own research. Here is what it comes down to. All this stuff is pushed out in front of you so much. And don't be lazy. You have to go back and fact check everything. I see so many stories every day that my friends post on Facebook. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure if you're listening, you've had a few of those too. The basic thing, when you see a story that you're like, what? That's crazy. You ever hear that if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is? That's probably the case of what you're reading. If it's sensationalized like that, it's like that on purpose. there's a reason why it's that way. It's not, there's no unbiased news anymore. It doesn't matter what you watch or what you read. So you have to really dig deep and to find the truth. And that's on you. You have to take responsibility for your own knowledge. Don't allow somebody else to feed you what they want to feed you. I mean, do your homework. I know it's hard out there. Or find some reliable news sources that you believe. Good luck, though. I have yet to find one that I will totally believe anything they say 100% of the time. Maybe if you find something that really interests you, take the time, look up a few other stories about it, and read a few things. It's like I see this stuff, somebody posted, this kid raped a toddler and didn't go to jail, and he's white, and so that's why. It's like there has to be more to the story than that. What kind of scary world do you live in where you think that that's it? That this is A plus B equals C? There's always these gray areas. You have to get the whole story. So this meme has been around for, 10 years or so. It's been used way before this group, the alt-right, supposedly has taken it over. Jimmy Johns, for example, tweeted out, Pepe, and immediately deleted it because they found out that it was now tied to white nationalism. And then, you know, what about these other people that I've used it? Like, there's this Reddit, Black People Twitter. You have to check it out. It is hilarious. Again, just funny people getting together, saying funny things on the internet in a forum of free expression. It's terrific. So if this is a sign of white nationalism, why is Nicki Minaj using it? Why is Chief Keef using it? Why did Katy Perry, a huge Hillary Clinton supporter, tweet it out a year ago or something? So, I mean, let's think about these things. Let's be objective and, you know, look at things in their entirety. This goes on to say, I mean, imagine some unknown high school Twitter troll lying on the origins of a cartoon frog meme, somehow made it into a presidential campaign's official website as a prominent national white supremacist. That's insane. Nailed it. That is insane. This is partly to the fault of the journalists who do that. But like I said, I mean, this is the way it is now. And it's not going to improve. It's not going to get any better. So there's only going to be more competition as the web hopefully continues to open up, unless some of these things pass. I know the government's already meddling their nose in it, trying to limit it as much as possible. But it's a great tool. So there's a lot of information out there. There's also a lot of garbage out there. So find your own truth, folks. Don't be lazy. So this week on the show, I was supposed to have my man Owen Harn on. He was on last year, and I think he had just completed, he's an actor, I think he just completed Max, that movie Max about the German Shepherd that was in theaters. I think he played the bad guy in that last year. And now I just saw him the other day in Vice Principals, the HBO show Danny McBride puts on, the guy who did Eastbound and Down. excuse me. And I saw him in there, and I was like, holy crap, that's Owen. And I was thinking about reaching out to him just to see what was going on. He lives in Largo, but I figured, oh, he'd be way too busy. I don't think he has time anymore. But he actually sent me a message on Twitter a couple weeks ago, like right after I saw him, and said, hey, man, I want to come do the show. And I was like, what? That's dope, dude. You totally should. So I got in contact. We were supposed to meet up tonight, but he is a father of a newborn and is pulling daddy duty. So he had to cancel last minute. So he's going to be on the show soon. hopefully maybe next week, I'm hoping. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to do another What's Going On. And I already have some people I'm going to call that's already on the agenda, some good ones. So before we get into that, this podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg. Check them out, slybar.com. Check out the Facebook at Sly Bar St. Pete and on Twitter, Sly Bar St. Pete. And, of course, my good friend Chrissy Parker at Truvy Salon and Spa, 8908 4th Street North, number B, unit B, probably, St. Petersburg. Make an appointment, 727-329-9751. And you can find her at TruvySalonAndSpa.com and then Truvy Salon and Spa on Facebook. So go give them a like. Certainly appreciate it. Let's get into What's Going On, Part 2. All right, we're going to call Rob Gargiulo, comic, producer of the Mike Calta Show, heard on 102.5 The Bone, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 10. Let's call Rob. I told him I was calling, so let's see if he picks up. I know he was bathing his child last time I heard, so hopefully he'll pick up. Rob Gargiulo. In the building, pick up the phone, Rob. Hey, Rob, hey, Rob. I told him an hour, or maybe I'm 10 minutes late.
You've reached Rob Gargiulo, executive producer of the Mike Calta Show on 102.5 The Bone and Cox Media Group Tampa. Please leave your name, number, and a brief message, and I will get back to you.
Well, I'm glad he didn't give his number out. That would have been weird. Let's try Kyle Roos. Tampa Bay comic tattooer extraordinaire Kyle Roos.
Hello?
Kyle, what's up, man?
What's up, buddy?
How you doing, pal? What's good?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. I'm hanging in. What's going on? What are you doing?
Driving to a show. What are you doing?
We're recording the homemade bar. Can you hear that on your end, or is that my end?
Oh, like you're all lucky?
Does it sound like
your window
clicking? I think that's my end.
Oh, yeah, hold on. My bad. I'm making some changes.
I think that was actually my end anyways. It's clicking real bad. Hey, hang on one second. Bummer, man. I don't know why it's not working this time. It worked so good last time. I wanted to talk to Kyle about the roast that's coming up at Foo Bar on the 28th, where I'm going to be the roast master, the master of ceremonies. I don't know why he's trusted me with this, but he is. So that's going to be on September 28th at Foo Bar. I believe we're starting at 9 p.m. We got a lot of good comics on there, including Kyle, of course, the man of honor. We got Justin Kupo. We have James Bailey, who hosts my mom's favorite podcast on this station here, or this network, the HMB Radio Network. We have Chris Mattson from Cigar City Comedy. Greg Maxwell, who actually started when I started doing stand-up, or tried to do stand-up back in the day. I was like 18, so many moons ago. I started with him. I thought he fell off the face of the earth. Turns out, still alive. So Greg will be there. Who else is on that? Justin, James, Chris, me. Who else? Who am I forgetting? Oh, Daniel Figueroa, of course. Racially Ambiguous, Daniel Figueroa. And many more. So make sure you check that out. I'll have info about it on the HMB radio page. If you haven't liked the HMB radio page, why don't you go ahead and do that for me, if you would. Facebook.com/HMB Radio. You can get in contact with the show. You can email me at thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. And Twitter, home_made_man. And then if you want to leave a voicemail or a text, you can do that on our voicemail line /text line, 813-693-2124. And of course, all that info is up on hmbradio.com. I'm going to be doing more stuff to that as time goes along. You know, I got a bunch of different jobs now, so it's kind of hard for me to keep up with all this stuff. But I got it, right? I mean, this is my livelihood we're talking about here. So I'm going to start doing some more writing and stuff. I say that, and I will. I'm going to try to call Rob Gargiulo one more time. Let's see if this works. I don't know. Let's give it a shot, though. I can already tell it's not going to work. Let's see. Seems to be a little better.
Hello.
Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, man.
We're recording right now. I'm going to see if this works. It worked so good last time. I don't know what happened, but I'm getting like feedback now.
Okay, cool. Let me know how it sounds.
It sounds okay. I'm just going to roll with it and see what happens.
Cool.
How you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. You getting ready for your show tonight? You're doing Comatic? Is that the final show?
Yeah, it is the final open mic that they're doing. I guess they are losing their lease, and they're looking for a newer spot, but... Yeah, they have a 10-minute slot tonight at 11:10, so I will be up on stage at 11:10 tonight.
This is the bad thing about St. Pete becoming such a cool town, is that now all the rent's going up, and these cool places that started can't afford to live anymore.
Yeah, this is the first time where I've seen a whole bunch of mics go away in like a week's span, because John just lost one James Joyce on Monday nights because of football. Kymatic Studios is going away, and I've never done really well at Sacred Grounds, but I've gone there a lot, and I know that they were losing their spot too. I don't know if they're keeping it now or what the deal is, but that's like three mics in a week or two that all disappeared.
Oh, you know, Sly Bar's gone too. I got the axe from there.
That's right. Yeah, so they're not doing that anymore. So it's, and I never had an opportunity to do that one. I'm intimidated by crowds that are not there to listen to stand up. and I'm not good at fighting over people to try and get their attention. So, yeah, four mics in a couple of weeks, man. That's a lot.
Yeah, I'm wondering what happened, if it was just oversaturation, because there were a lot. But I think, you know what it was? I wish that Slybar would have gave it another 6 to 8 weeks, because I think people would have started to come back once, like, tour season started again, you know?
Yeah, this is my first go-round. I started in December. Now when we're in September, I've never seen it through football season. I've also never seen it through outside of the summer months. I've heard that Coconuts does really well, and I've been there where there's, like, last night I was there, and it was three comics and me. But I've heard that during the off season, when there's actual people around, that place will be packed, and there will be 20, 25 people in there on a Tuesday night for an open mic.
Yeah, that's the thing with Slybar, too. Like, when it was, you know, wintertime, you'd have a guy that would come up and be like, oh, yeah, I remember this dude last year. Yeah, I'm from New York. I've always wanted to try to do comedy, and I figure what a better place than a place where I'm visiting, and I'll never have to see you people again.
Yeah, and those are the people who also bring their friends, four or five people with them. So now it's not just, hey, I'm performing the same jokes in front of the same comics night after night. Now there's actually people out there to watch it, so...
Yeah, so I don't know. It's a bummer. I don't know if it's just oversaturation or what, but hopefully it'll pick back up. I'm going to work on trying to get another mic, but I'm also, like, so busy with other stuff, too. I might just take a break for a while. I mean, we still have Yard of Ale cooking every Thursday, and that's weekly.
Yeah, that's a fun one. It's tough for me because I get up early in the morning. Like, when I get up at 4, it's tough to go out to a mic at 10 o'clock tonight. Even tonight, I had to take a nap at 5:30 because I knew... going out tonight, I'm going to be out till 11. I get on stage at 11:10. I'm done at 11:25. That means I'm not getting home until at least 12:15. And when my alarm goes off at 4, it's a tough thing to wake up to. But when you go to Yard of Ale, and I have a Friday off where I'm able to go out to a Yard of Ale, I always enjoy that, Mike.
How has it been with you with trying to keep up with these things? And I mean, you have a kid. And then you're trying to do this comedy thing, and then you have a job where you have to wake up at 4 in the morning. How are you managing that?
Because napping is really clutch, man. I had no idea. I mean, I used to nap out of laziness. Now I nap out of necessity, which is weird. But, you know, if I get home from a mic and it's 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, you know, it takes a little bit to unwind. And by the time I'm going to bed, it's about midnight, and I'm getting up at about 4:30. So, but I'm only at work until 10:30, you know,
right.
I'm pretty much done my day when most people are just starting there. So that gives me the ability to go home, nap, sit and write. My kids in school until 3 o'clock in the afternoon anyway. So I have nothing to do from 10:30 on most days. I can go home and just work on stand up and nap and get ready to go to a mic that night.
You don't have to do stuff for the show like during the day, like prepare stories or anything like
no,
that?
No, I do that. I do that at night usually because you want to try and catch like the most, the newest stuff. It's different for every radio show. I've worked for shows where I would go in at 3 a.m. and I'd start compiling prep for that day's show. Here, I'm able to do it the night before. So, you know, I sit down and I look for stories at around 6 or 7 o'clock. And I spend about an hour and a half just pulling audio and gathering stories and stuff. And really, it's not, you know, if I go and I sit at a mic, I might be on my phone because I'm looking up topics to talk about on the next day's show. If I'm a lot of times you'll go to these open mics and you'll wait an hour to get up. And that's a perfect time to sit there and kind of go through the news and find what I'm looking for and what people might be interested in hearing the next day.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like a double-edged sword, too, because you can write stuff off the stories you see, and then you have stuff for the radio show in the morning, too.
Yeah, and it's fun. I've worked a lot in radio. It's been 12, 13 years now, and this is the most fun I've ever had, and it's weird, but the higher up I don't want to say higher up I get, because that sounds like I'm successful, and you know from radio,
you are
dude,
successful.
But radio doesn't pay. When it comes down to financials, man, radio doesn't pay dick. So, pay squat. So there's not, there's no real big payoff unless you're the guy sitting behind the console and the show's named after you. When you're the lesser known guys, you know, it's, you're still working for teacher's salary.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're the guy that's sitting behind that microphone and you're the guy that has that show that's named after him, then you're making a lot more than a teacher's salary. But the further I've gone along, man, the less I've actually had to spend in an actual building, which is fantastic. I can go home and send and receive emails all day long, and I don't have to be stuck in a radio studio to do it. And, you know, for the past 5 or 6 years before coming here, that's the way it was. I would get in at 5 a.m. and I'd be there until 2 or 3 in the afternoon. You don't have to do that here, which is pretty cool.
I would imagine technology has come a long way, too, and helpful. One of the things that I noticed today, I did the remote with Kevin today at the Everglades Farmers Supply or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And back in the day, I guess you would have these big vans that would have to come out, and then you'd have to roll up that big antenna and then do it that way. I was amazed that now they just have this little box, you know, pretty much just an iPad or something, and then you just plug that up to the internet, and then boom, you can connect to the studio.
Yeah, it blows my mind how I have no idea how radio worked prior to digital audio. Like, during the commercial break, we'll go to a commercial break, and I'll have 8 minutes. And during that commercial break, I can go through and I can chop up the previous segment that we just got done talking and save that for a best of. Whereas, dude, back in, like, the 90s and 80s, you would have to chop up actual tape and tape it. Like, they would have actual recording tape, and you'd have to cut it and splice it and type. I don't know how anything ever got done. And now with digital, it's so much easier, and it makes doing – I went in and recorded 2 commercials today, and it took me a total of 2 minutes to record, edit, and email a commercial. Whereas when I first started in radio, you know, I was still doing those on 8-tracks, and that was – and carts, and that was – that was a process that would take 15, 20 minutes just to do a 1 minute commercial spot. It's incredible.
Yeah, I guess that's a bad thing too, though, is that now that it's so easy, you don't get paid as much either.
Well, and it's also, I believe, that the digitalization of radio has really cut down on jobs, man. It is a shrinking pond. You know, there's a lot of guys voice track shifts and aren't even on. The big secret to radio is that what you're listening to half the time isn't even live. The person recorded it earlier that day. And whenever they say you're in control of the music, that's garbage, because it's some program director who picked out what song's going to play at what time throughout the day. It's all a scam. But it really has, the digitalization of radio has really cut down on guys who do night shows. You know, there's no guys doing a live night show anymore, because you can pay one guy to voice track the same show for 7 or 8 different radio stations across the country, and that cuts down on the local guys who get their starts doing nights, then they move up to afternoons, and then they move up to mornings. Those jobs are gone, man, and it's a scary business. I fear for guys who are trying to get into it now.
Yeah, I think podcasting is going to be the big thing behind that. I think The Bone's a unique station. I'm really glad that I'm there, because it's talk-based, you know, and most of the shows are local. But I think definitely in the future, these guys are going to have to switch to podcasting. I read this story the other day that I think there's like $500 million in advertising that went to podcasting last year, and it's only continuing to grow.
Yeah, if you have a good podcast and it stands out, you're able to capitalize off it financially. Look at Mark Maron. Look at Joe Rogan makes money off of his podcast. I mean, when you have a big name and you do it the right way, you can make money. And when there's Wi-Fi in cars, everybody says that's not going to be the death of radio, but I really feel like it will be, because everybody at that point, you will have hundreds of thousands of options to choose from. You can pull up any podcast with the click of a button on your phone and stream it live through your car. When Wi-Fi hits cars, why listen to regular radio if you could pick up a Joe Rogan podcast and listen to that as you're driving?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of already have that. I mean, I use my phone. I just plug my phone into the stereo jack in my radio, and that's how I listen to music and podcasts. I mean, I hate to say it, even though I love radio and I want to do radio, I don't listen to much radio anymore.
No, I don't either. You know what's cool? So Apple has really taken hold of in-car dash stereo systems with the Apple Play. And one of the first stations across the country is 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. They have an app that you can now – it's now compatible, and it's the only radio station in the entire country with an app that you can actually stream through your Apple Play on your dashboard. And you're pulling it up, and you're not using the Wi-Fi off your phone. Well, you are now, but when you do have Wi-Fi in your car, you won't be using your own Wi-Fi. You'll be using whatever personal hotspot you have. But yeah, that's the first station to actually go ahead and make a compatible app so that you can pull it up on your dashboard and stream the app just as you would on your phone. And that's just the first station to do it. I think once stations start doing that, they're going to embrace Wi-Fi in cars more, and I think that's going to combat podcasting. But podcasting is a great way for guys to get a start in radio, because a lot of people – have a lot of time on their hands, and there's a lot of different things. There's a niche for everything, man. You like craft brewing, there's a craft brewing podcast to listen to.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's what you have to do, too. We were talking about this today. You have to find some sort of niche. And, like, Kyle Roos wants to do a tattoo podcast. You know, he does the comedy stuff, and then he wants to interview tattooers, which I can't wait. I hope he does it. It's just finding the time with him because, you know, he's got a kid, too. He's doing the tattoo. He's doing the comedy. He's got so many other things in the works. I mean, I want it because I want the traffic to my website, of course, and then I can help him out and distribute his stuff because a lot of these people don't have gear and stuff to do it, and I have the capability. So finding that little niche is super important because when you're covering a broad range, that's why I like to start with mine. Like, I was just you don't know what you're doing until you start doing it. And then I decided to focus locally on the Tampa Bay area, and that's when I started to find my stride, I guess, you know? So it's important to find those little tiny things that you can really focus on because people are into, like you said, anything. I mean, people dress up in furry costumes and run around all day. And if they had a podcast on that, people would love it.
One of what I, you know, Ryan Hoppe, he does the Hoppe Hour podcast.
Yep.
One of the reasons why I think what he does is actually smart. And I enjoy his podcast because of the people he interviews. When he takes guys who are comedians, I like hearing just these local guys who I know personally and I've seen work out and stuff. I like hearing them talk about their views on stand-up. He's appealing to someone like it's a niche. I'm a niche audience. It's something that I'm interested in and I go out of my way to seek. You're right. Once you start offering something that caters to a certain group of people, those people start to listen, and then they spread it to the people in that little clique of theirs who also share that same interest. And then by word of mouth, it's incredible. We're doing a 7-day cruise, and we're going on a boat in the middle of the Caribbean, and we're going to record an hour podcast every day and email it back to the radio station, and it'll play on the air from 7 to 8 a.m. during drive time. The fact that any of that is possible in this day and age is incredible. It's really just a feat of how amazing technology is and how it's really changed the radio landscape altogether.
How is Cox adopting? I'm sure that, you know, they know this stuff, that podcasting is going to be the next step in these things. I know Mike, for example, didn't do podcasting because he felt that he wasn't going to get credit for that, I guess in ratings or something like that. Has he kind of changed his tune on that and maybe eventually something he'll get into?
To be honest with you, I can't speak for him. I know that I've always been a big proponent of podcasting because the guy I worked for before Mike didn't do podcasts for the first 3 or 4 years that I was there. And his reasoning was, why would I drive people to listen to the show when they're not going to listen when we get rated for it? Which is exactly what you're saying. You get rated between 6 and 10 a.m. If somebody goes and listens to the podcast at 2, you're not going to get ratings for that. But if they're listening at 2 between 6 and 10 and you're forcing them to only catch that content between 6 and 10, you're going to get ratings for that. Within 3 or 4 years of working there, the guy I was working for switched to doing podcasts. And we didn't see any effect in the ratings. It didn't dip. So people weren't tuning out because they could listen later. They were just listening more. And I think Cox realizes that because they've been talking about, since I've started here, about putting more podcasts on the air during the weekends. When you have 24 hours of all talk to fill, that's difficult. And nobody wants to hear the same shows replayed over and over and over again. And that's what we do Saturdays and Sundays, minus a few live shows here and there. It's recycled content from the week before, and that's just an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours where you could plug in a podcast and put people like Tom and Dan, and there's plenty of podcasts in the area that you could throw up and put on the air there.
Sure. But, you know, with the ratings thing, I know that you guys aren't in control of that, but it seems like Arbitron would be realizing that people are listening on podcasts. I don't understand why you can't just combine your live audience and then combine it with the podcast listens and just, you know, do a mean, you know, type of thing.
Believe me, man. Seeing what I've seen here in Tampa Bay in the past 2 years as far as ratings are concerned has blown my mind. I used to think I had a grasp of how the rating system worked, and then I come to a market where there's a guy that's cheating and admits to cheating and breaking FCC violations and breaking his contract with Nielsen, and he continues to be on the air. It blows my mind what goes on in this town. So I used to think I had a grasp on how readings worked. At this point, we've all kind of just gone, we have no idea what works and what doesn't at this point, because you never know. From week to week, we could be number 4 one week, we could be number 8 another week, and nothing changes. It's the same product, it's the same delivery. People's listening habits change. Who knows if people are still cheating in the market? You have no idea what's going on. It's a weird, weird industry.
And it's a really small sample size too, right? I mean, these are people who get boxes that they hook up to, I don't know what, their car stereo or something, and that's they measure how long they're listening and to what station.
Yeah, it's almost like a pager, and it's pretty much the same concept. But yeah, it measures how long you're listening and what you're listening to. And before it used to be diaries, man, when I first started in radio, you would get a diary every 6 months. And what they do is they would send out these journals to people's homes, and people were supposed to write down what they listened to and how long they listened to it each day. Well, nobody did that because they're lazy. So at the end of the week, they would just write in, oh, I listened to 102.7 WJSE for 30 minutes. It's not accurate. And guess what? When those numbers come back, and the program directors see that this isn't working, they start making switches, and you have to wait another 6 months to find out if any of those changes worked. It's weird. Now we get ratings every single week, and we know, hey, we had a higher listening audience on Monday during the 7 o'clock hour than we did on Tuesday at the 8 o'clock hour. They've made it more streamlined so you get immediate results quicker, but I don't know. It doesn't matter anymore. We still do the same thing we'd always do, whether people listen or they don't listen. You can't really change towards the ratings.
Yeah, and that's a good thing about listening on your phone or your computer, is that you can quantify it. I mean, it's right there. You have a logged in IP from not only 2 people or whatever it is, of 100 to, I don't know how many people get those things. But I mean, you just have everybody that's listening right at your fingertips right there. It's going to be, I think it's going to change the game and really make things way more accurate, and hopefully that will, help.
Yeah, I thought PPM would be the system that they're using now, I thought would be the best representation of the population with that sample size that you were talking about. But again, it goes back to, dude, there's weeks where we crush among women, and I go, but all we tell are wiener jokes. I don't understand how that's even possible. But we'll come in and we'll beat Wild, we'll beat Kane, we'll beat all of these lady focused programmed radio shows, and we're fart jokes. Like, it doesn't make sense, but it works, and it continues to keep us employed here on the air. So I mean, I don't know how long, but I'll continue to enjoy it for as long as I can.
Yeah, they try to figure people out too. I know that there's a psychology behind it, but the fact of the matter is that everybody likes a good fart joke. I don't care who you are, it's just funny.
Yeah, well, listen, one of the most polarizing people in radio ever was Howard Stern, and he became America's sweetheart when he was on America's Got Talent. But years before, he wouldn't have been as successful as he was if he was just popular among men. Women liked him too. And when you can cater to both audiences, both men and women, that's when you have something special. And that's why I really enjoy our show, because we do better among women some weeks than we do men. And that's, I actually enjoy that. I go, okay, cool. We're offering something that everybody can listen to.
Perfect. Rob, we're getting ready to wrap it up here. Thank you very much for talking to me. I'll see you next week. I'm going to be there bright and early next Friday at your remote, 4 a.m.
Thank you for having me, and congrats on the gig, man. It's awesome to see you in the building.
Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
See you, dude.
All right, there you go. Rob Gargiulo, producer of the Mike Calta Show, heard every Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m., 102.5 The Bone here locally. Check it out. Support those guys. I guess it worked. We somehow made it work. Technology's fickle, isn't it? It's a fickle lady. And you got to sometimes just rub it down and give her what she wants to make it happen. I know we had it break in a few times there. But hopefully it was listenable. Thank you very much for tuning in. I will talk to you next week, hopefully with Owen Harn. Like the Facebook page, facebook.com/HMB Radio. Sorry, and follow me on Twitter, home_made_man. If you're listening on Radio St. Pete, make sure you stay tuned for Jazz with Frank Rivera, and followed by the Indie Circuit at 10 if you're listening on Sundays. Subscribe to the podcast. Like it, rate it, share it, please. God, I love you very much. Listener, I'll talk to you all soon. Will Kuntz, HMB Radio. Take it easy.